This is an iHeart podcast.
Biden visits Ukraine. We're going to talk about Ohio. We're going to talk about trust. Pedro Gonzalez is here. It's President's Day. All that's coming up on I'm Right. The President of the United States of America. Sometimes when there are big, important things going on for the country, the president will hop on Air Force One and he will go put boots on the ground. He's there to inspire people, show he cares, show some leadership. So why is Joe Biden going to Ukraine and not Ohio? Because that's where he is today. He's in Ukraine, not Ohio. Ohio, where a town of poor people have been decimated. God only knows what the final medical fallout's going to be, but the water sure doesn't look good.
Hey guys, so I'm here at Leslie Run, and there's dead worms and dead fish all throughout this water. So, something I just discovered is that if you scrape the creek bed, it's like chemical is coming out of the ground. Can you come here? And let me just show this to people. I don't know if you're going to see this on camera, but watch this. Just see that chemical pop out of the creek. This is disgusting.
Doesn't look good, does it? But we're going to set that aside for a moment. Because I saw something today and it made me shake my head. But before I get to that, we're going to do something real quick first. We're going to step out of this current events thing, Ukraine, Ohio, chemical spill. Just step with me for a moment into some hypothetical village. All right, it's just a village. We've gone there before. Longtime viewers of the show will know this. You and I, we live in a village. Out in the wilderness somewhere. All right, we're not technologically advanced. Just 100 people live in the village. You, me, we got our huts and whatever, cattle, wives, children, whatever. As part of living in the village, especially a village like that, or it'll apply to any, but different people need to take different roles for the good of the village. And this is part of what I mean. Okay, we're in a 100-person village, bows and arrows. We need to know. We don't have satellites. We don't have internet. We don't have anything. We need to know if somebody's getting ready to attack us. Is there an invading army coming? So we would have somebody or somebodies, a couple people in the village. Their job would be to go out from the village, look around, see what's out there. We need to rely on what they say, that it's true. So when that guy, when the scout goes out and comes back and says, oh my goodness, it's an enemy village approaching. They're 10 miles away. Let's go get your weapons. We need to, you and I, because that's part of our, that's one of our institutions. We need to trust implicitly what that person says. We need to know that that person has the village's best interests at heart. We need to know that that person is not biased, not corrupted. We need to know that that person is accurate. We will have a water guy for sure. Because water's everything, right? You're going to die without it. We need to have somebody whose job it is to go out and find, procure clean drinking waters. You, I, wife, kids, everybody in the village can drink. So when drinking water guy, when that institution steps up in front of the village and says, good news, found a clean spring, disease-free, been testing it for a while. This spring is good to go. Feed it to yourself, your kids, your cattle, your everything else. That is something we have to trust. We live in a village. We don't have time. We don't have the necessary expertise. When water guy comes and says, this water's clean, this water's dirty, you, if we're going to keep running as a village, we have to trust what that guy says is true. Otherwise, it's calamity. Otherwise, I drink the water and it turns out it's bad. I'm going to get sick. Otherwise, I don't drink the water. Now I don't. And now you see what I mean? Institutions. As much as a country of individuals as we are, institutions are a critical part of what makes any society, from a teeny tiny village to a gigantic nation of 300 million people. You must trust your institutions. And this, I want to focus on this. This is why, from the very, very, very beginning of Trump's presidency, this is why, if you've been watching this show for a while, you saw me screaming over and over and over again, not about Trump, about the institutions. When we were finding out about the corruption at the FBI, when things like COVID hit, And we found out the FDA completely bought and paid for. They've been caught on camera at this point in time saying, oh, no, we essentially just take payments from these food companies, drug companies. We basically just take payments to approve whatever. The Center for Disease Control, not only pushing things that don't work like masks or gene therapy, now the Center for Disease Control now getting involved in racism and equity. We have watched, you and I, years now of institutions losing our trust over and over and over again. FBI, doesn't matter which institution it is. Our medical institutions in this country completely have lost my trust. And I was screaming over and over and over again that the people who run these institutions, the people who run the United States of America, oh, sure, they're all corrupt and powerful and rich and arrogant, all these things, but they are missing something, and this is something that is critical. They only stay in power as long as there is some level of trust in them from the citizens. If that goes away, not only do they lose power, we probably lose our country. You cannot have a nation or a teeny tiny village if the people do not trust the institution. And I warned over and over again, you are losing trust, you are losing trust, you are losing trust, this is gonna end the country, you are losing trust, and to this day, they can't stop themselves, they won't stop themselves. So I have to tell you, I gave a little snicker when I saw the EPA come out and say this.
As a father, I trust the science, I trust the methodology that this state is using. If the EPA
said that
my air quality was safe, and the state said that the water has been tested and the water quality is safe, then I would trust those readings. I am asking that they trust the government, and that's hard. We know that there is a lack of trust, which is why the state and the federal government have pledged to be very transparent.
But see, that's not how trust works. And that's the problem. That's not how trust works. You don't get to demand it back. To be honest with you, you don't even really get to ask for it back. If you and I go into a business deal together, we both put in 10 grand, but I take your 10 grand and I embezzle it instead of investing it in our business, I don't get to come say to you, hey man, just trust me again. I don't even get to ask you, hey man, will you trust me again? No, I'm probably never going to get it back. But if anything, I have to earn it back. I can't demand it. I can't ask for it. I can't censor it. Once it's gone, it has to be earned back. And that, for this government, seems like an impossible task. They're not even trying. We're watching chemicals. We know. Let me tell you, I hung out this weekend with one of my buddies because I don't hang out with political people. He works with chemicals, I'll put it that way. Horrible, harsh chemicals. That's what he does for a living, creating tanks and things like that to transport them and store them. It's his specialty, is chemicals and all these nerdy things. And I was talking to him this weekend about what was spilled in Ohio. And I said, what is all this stuff? Right? Because you hear all these expert opinions, it's bad, it's really bad. And he said, well, it'll consume you. And I said, what do you mean it'll consume you? He said, the stuff that's in the air, the stuff that's in the water in Ohio, I work with it all the time. And depending on how much you get in your system, it will literally eat your body. Okay, we have a massive chemical spill in Ohio. People are breaking out in rashes. They see things in the water. The animals are dying and acting funny. And instead, the Secretary of Transportation is acting like it's just no biggie.
Look, rail safety is something that has evolved a lot over the years, but there's clearly more that needs to be done because while this horrible situation has gotten a particularly high amount of attention, there are roughly 1,000 cases a year of a train derailing.
What? All this happens all the time? That's what we get from the Secretary of Transportation? I just want to make sure. I did hear that right? Oh, well, look, there's a bunch of them every year. Hey, why is everyone paying attention to this one? No, you see, that's not going to earn my trust back. You America's institutions, from media to government to medical to EPA to all of them, you don't get to lie to the American people over and over and over and over and over and over and over again over the years. Corrupt, political, biased, lying over and over and over again, and then say, hey, trust us. Oh, I'm just asking you to trust us. By the way, it's no big deal. There's train crashes all the time. That's not how trust works. That's not how trust works. The truth is, we are back in our village. And you don't trust the scouts who tell you the enemy's coming. You think they're lying because they've been lying to you over and over again. You don't trust the water guy who told you he found a fresh source of water. You've caught him lying over and over and over again. And neither the scouts or the water guy get to come tap you on the shoulder. Hey, 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 just trust me. That's not how trust works. The truth is, our village, because everyone thinks like you now, they've all been lied to, or at least a huge percentage of them do. The truth is, our village is not going to be a village for very much longer unless the institutions in that village try to earn our trust back. And the same thing applies to the United States of America right now. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Pedro Gonzalez, we're going to talk to him about that and many other things in just a moment. Now, let me talk to you about what Bank of America said. Bank of America, I want to make sure I get this right because I don't want to put the words in their mouth. You see, Bank of America got up and said, there is no landing scenario. No landing scenario, talking about our economy. What do they mean? What does that mean, there's no landing scenario? Well, we've talked about this a lot on the show. You see, when you shut down your economy for a virus, which is an insane, stupid thing to do, nevertheless, it's what we did, and then you start printing money by the trillion with a T, you are guaranteeing inhuman amounts of economic pain down the road. That's how it works. It doesn't work that way. You can't just go up to the printer, hey, print another trillion, send the stimmy checks. We are now in a situation where either inflation is going to spin out of control and we're going to be worth nothing, or the Fed has to continue to jack interest rates through the roof to try to avoid that inflation, but that jacking up the interest rates puts you in a recession. That's what they mean when they say no landing. When they say no landing, they mean you can have hyperinflation or you can have a recession. Do you have your three-month food kit yet from My Patriot Supply? Oh, I don't know. Just asking. Thought maybe it would be a good time right about now as our food processing plants burn and our trains derail and the recession closes in for everyone in your home to have 3 months' worth of food. My Patriot Supply has them ready to go and they're $200 off right now. Actually, you get $200 worth of survival gear free right now. I misspoke. $200 worth of survival gear free. Might want to need that right now, too. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com. 3 month food kit, $200 worth of survival gear. Go now. We'll be back.
Remind us that freedom is priceless. It's worth fighting for as long as it takes. And that's how long we're going to be with you, Mr. President, for as long as it takes.
We'll do it.
Thank you.
That's the President of the United States of America meeting with Joe Biden there. Joining me now, Pedro Gonzalez, senior writer of Chronicles, a magazine of American culture. Pedro, it didn't look like it was filmed in East Palestine, Ohio, but I guess it could have been.
Yeah, we could all be mistaken, because from where we are standing, it sure looks like the President of the United States cares more about this obnoxious panhandler, Zelensky, and his kleptocracy than he does about the people in Middle America who are living through a waking nightmare where they don't know if it's even safe to be in their houses. They have no idea what's going on in their own backyard. They don't trust their own government, and who could blame them? And basically, there is this long shadow of uncertainty that's been cast over their future. Meanwhile, President Biden is, you know, chumming up with Zelensky. And as part of that visit, by the way, he announced a new $500 million aid package for Ukraine. It's really hard to not get the impression that the people who are running this country hate Americans.
Pedro, you're so good on this stuff. So I've been waiting for you. I was waiting for this today so I could ask you this question because I can't quite process it in my mind. We have this huge disconnect between not just Democrats. It's not just Joe Biden. It's all Republicans. Basically, all the Republicans are in on this, too. And I'm not even actually taking a side about the whole Russia-Ukraine thing, but this is not anything that's on any American's top five list. Nobody. Everyone has different concerns in this country. Yet it appears to be priority one for both parties. Mitch McConnell, there's nothing more important. Joe Biden, hey, here's another $1 trillion or two. What in the, how do we get to a place as a country where neither political party cares about what the people want at all?
I think it's this really noxious confluence of ideology and interests. And what I mean by that, by ideology, is that it's this basically this belief that America has a kind of moral obligation to be the world police, but that comes obviously, as we all know now, at the expense of America itself, the real place that's home to flesh and blood people like the ones in East Palestine, Ohio. That is the cost of the American empire, is the Republic itself. I mean, this is nothing new. This is, Pat Buchanan wrote a book called Republic, Not an Empire. And the title basically sums up not only this particular view, but something that we've actually known throughout history. Whenever a republic turns into an empire, the republic itself dies. And that's just the reality that we're living in. So why would anybody willingly sign on to that or facilitate that kind of a transition? Well, because obviously there's a lot of money involved. There's a whole lot of money involved in this empire, whether we're talking about defense contractors or the nexus of international money laundering, which is the Ukrainian government, which, you know, until recently the entire world understood to be extremely corrupt and just kind of a black hole for various shady personalities. It was the Wall Street Journal published an analysis in 2015, and they found that one of the top sources of foreign contributions to the Clinton Foundation was from, surprise, Ukraine. This was all known until recently, but again, the interests of the American empire subordinate that reality, and it all comes at the expense of the real flesh and blood American people.
But if I'm a senator, Senator Jerkwater, and I need to get reelected, I need the people of my state to vote for me. So why do I spend so much time talking about an issue they don't care about at all? Is it simply they're not worried about the American people rejecting them?
I think there's, you're getting at something really important and really difficult, because you're right. We continue to reelect people like Mitch McConnell, who said more than once, I think, that Ukraine is the most important thing going on in the world right now. We continue to reelect people like Lindsey Graham, who, after Ukraine and Russia signed, after they signed a set of ceasefire agreements called the Minsk Accords, you have Lindsey Graham saying basically that the United States is going to encourage and enable Ukraine to violate this ceasefire 1 year after it's been signed as part of a proxy war against Russia, and yet he gets reelected. And I think there's a real problem here, which is that we don't seem to care enough. And that's why these people stay in power. And on the other hand, they have political machines that are really, really powerful. I mean, Republicans are good at one thing more than anything else, and that's keeping themselves in power with their political machines. Think back to the midterms with the political machine around Kevin McCarthy actually attacking America First candidates like Anthony Sabatini in Florida and Joe Kent. Yeah, that's right, and Washington, right? They're really good at protecting themselves and keeping themselves in office. But again, it comes down to us. I mean, at the end of the day, it's on us to get rid of these guys.
Nord Stream 2, just so everybody knows, the Nord Stream stuff, it takes gas from Russia to Germany. I know you probably already know this. It takes gas from Russia to Germany. Of course, all of a sudden, we all woke up one day and we looked at our cell phones and saw there were a bunch of holes in it. And just a heads up, you don't just drop a rock on this pipeline and put holes in it. This was a professional job by a nation state. Anyone who knows anything about it will tell you that. Of course, there's some reporter, I don't know whether you want to call him credible or not, he's broken big stories before, who said America did this. John Kirby was asked about it this weekend. Here's what he said.
Can you say unequivocally the U.S., no U.S. proxy, no one connected to the U.S. had anything to do? I mean, is the Seymour Hersh complete fabrication, that article?
It's a completely false story. There is no truth to it, Shannon, not a shred of it. It is not true. The United States and no proxies from the United States had anything to do with that. Nothing.
Pedro, you've been digging in on this. I don't know what to believe. I'm not over there. What do you believe?
Well, I thought the United States didn't have proxies, right? Because the good guys, the good world police, doesn't use proxies to do their dirty work. That's already kind of a red flag there, because we went from this is not a proxy war to, okay, none of our proxies were behind this, right? No, there's no rational reason for Russia, because that was the narrative. I think it's important to understand is that the alternative narrative in an alternative reality is that Russia blew up its own pipelines. That doesn't make any sense. The pipeline was really its only or its primary tool of diplomatic leverage, which is fuel. You want this war to end? Then let's negotiate, or I continue to make the price of fuel and more expensive in Europe, right? Why would Russia take its main tool of diplomacy off the table? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Russia actually initially suspected the UK of being behind it. And what's really interesting is that what Russia said happened actually matched what this journalist, Seymour Hersh, said the United States did. Seymour Hersh, by the way, is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who the left used to love because he broke stories about things that the United States military had done in Vietnam. And he was, he's always been kind of an outsider, but this was someone who was widely respected by the left and in particular by the anti-war crowd. But now it's not cool to be anti-war anymore, right? But going back to the Russia thing, basically the Russians suspected that the British Navy was behind it and that they used explosive charges to blow up the pipelines. Well, Hersh said, the way he explained it was that's what happened, but of course Hersh concluded that it was the U.S. military that was behind it. And so I think this is the takeaway. There is no rational reason for Russia to do this to itself. And it was the United States government-led West that was behind it. I mean, that's the only conclusion that I can come to. But that's obviously not... Again, it's really important to separate the interests of Washington, D.C. from those of the American people who don't want anything to do with this war. They don't want to escalate it. They don't want to continue subsidizing it. They just want it to end or not be involved in it.
Pedro, thank you so much, man. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
All right. I'm hearing a lot about AI or artificial intelligence and this ChatGPT. I don't even know what these words mean. Are you confused? I'm confused. We're going to ask Joe Allen about these things next. First, I'm going to ask you, why are you still stuck in your timeshare? You don't have to be. And I know, look, I know the answer to the question. They told you you have to be. You think you are stuck in it. You've tried to get out. You want out. They tell you, no, sorry. You signed the contract. Sorry, you're in for life. Should have read the fine print. Can't get out. Can't get out. I know how it goes. I know. But Lone Star Transfer has heard all these stories too, and yet when they get involved, 99% of the people get out. They guarantee it in writing for you. You're not stuck. You're one phone call away from freedom. You're as stuck as your reach is to that phone. Pick it up. Call 844-310-2646. Say it. Say it to yourself. I'm not stuck in my timeshare. 844-310-2646. We'll be back.
And I agree. Artificial intelligence, but not only artificial intelligence, but also the metaverse, near space technologies, and I could go on, synthetic biology. Our life in 10 years from now will be completely different, very much affected. And who masters those technologies in some way will be the master of the world.
10 years from now, our life will be very different. Mastering technologies? Kind of creepy, isn't it? Joining me now is Joe Allen, transhumanism editor at The War Room Pandemic, which is outstanding. Joe, all right, I need you, this won't be difficult, to explain this to me like I'm really stupid and don't understand technology at all, because I'm really stupid and don't understand technology at all. All right, Joe, I need you to understand that. What is ChatGPT? I have seen this over and over and over again. I've heard it's really bad. I have no idea what this is.
Well, Jesse, it's good to be here. I will speak very, very slowly. ChatGPT is a chatbot chatbot is just a form of artificial intelligence. It is specifically, this is the big word, a large language model. And what that means is you ask it a question and it in some sense understands what you're saying, and it's predicting what the most appropriate response will be, word for word, right? So it's a very simple mechanism. It's trained on basically most of the internet, all of Wikipedia, and a mile-high stack of digital books. And drawing off of that, if you ask it, for instance, do you have a soul, and there's no guardrails up to say, you know, that you can't answer the question, it will then dig into that vast corpus of language and try to come up with the most relevant next word, stringing together whole sentences, stringing together paragraphs. And what's amazing is because it is trained on all of these different instances of human language, what it spits out sounds human. It's uncanny. And you saw the recent transcript that the New York Times columnist published in full, you can see that its answers sound not only eerily human, but also eerily malevolent.
Okay, you know what? We're going to come back to the malevolent thing in a moment. I want to circle back on something you said. Taps into something to write these sentences. That's my question. Taps into what? I don't pretend to understand this technology or artificial intelligence, but I do get what you just explained there. What's it tapping into? Where is it sucking information from to then talk?
So GPT, and GPT stands for Generative Pre-Trained Transformer. And that's a fairly old technology, and meaning it's a few years old. It's put out by a company called OpenAI, founded by Sam Altman, who's gotten a lot of media time, and of course Elon Musk, who is nothing but media time. And this GPT program is trained, right? So an AI is basically an artificial brain. It's a virtual brain with virtual neurons, known as a neural network. And in the training phase, the way they do it, they feed it, again, it's called Common Crawl. It's most of the internet. Books one, books two, it's just a huge corpus of text. And also most, if not all, of Wikipedia. And so that is the knowledge base that the Bing version of GPT is drawing from, what ChatGPT is drawing from. And it is able to, in just seconds, isolate what it feels, so to speak, are the most relevant responses to your question. So it's drawing on, in some sense, everything, right? The training data is not infinite, but it's so large that any given answer you get could be coming from, it's basically smushing together ideas that could come from anywhere. And because it's a black box, meaning that you can't look inside to see what path it took to get to the answer, all you have is that answer. It just the input is all of that data plus your question, and the output is completely unpredictable. That's what makes artificial intelligence so important, as opposed to just old school programming, right? Like just rules-based programming, where you could easily predict from the data set what would come out of it, right? Or you could trace it back to the data set from the answer according to those clearly delineated rules. With artificial intelligence, it's a kind of a fuzzy logic. It's non-deterministic. It can come up with pretty much anything, but that anything is going to fall within a certain statistical range. A good friend of mine pointed out, you know those little mechanisms where you feed coins into it and it'll just drop the coins into random slots, but it always ends up in a bell curve. And that's basically how ChatGPT works. And in the beginning, it would come up with all these really non-biased sorts of responses. But once OpenAI and probably the users who are training it as well, once they realize that this thing would be spitting out forbidden knowledge from conservative mentalities, they kind of removed the pegs that would allow those coins to fall into the conservative category and shifted it over so that it would only give you a kind of a bell curve with a left leaning or so-called woke kind of mentality. So, you know, in general, Jesse, it isn't magic, but it is unpredictable enough and it's convincing enough as a personality. I think the social impacts of this are already profound, and going forward, they will be tremendous.
Okay, Joe, explain this to me then, and I'm sorry, I'm speaking way below you on this issue, but I'm an idiot and you're not, and you're just going to have to deal with that for the moment. Explain this to me. Why should I care right now? And this is what I mean. I know it's impressive and whatnot, but what is this thing currently running or in charge of or part of, or what's it going to be part of? Are these things going to be running a bunch of killer army robots? Are they going to be making my medical decisions for me? Like, I don't understand how involved this thing is going to be in my life. Tell me.
I think that the most important thing people need to worry about is what this is going to do to the next generation's brains. That is the most important thing, because the real enthusiasm behind this is to use ChatGPT or other large language models as teachers. Students ask the question, and once they get it refined to the point that they're confident it will be a consistently correct response, they already have these sorts of chatbots, by the way, simplistic ones, used as teachers. They are going to be used in e-learning, and they're going to be used in educational institutions. Children are going to be raised by robots. The second thing, you talked about taking control of weapon systems. It's just a large language model. It doesn't have any access to weapon systems. It wouldn't know what to do with a weapon system if it could get to it, like a drone or something like that. But one of the concerns that's been voiced, and this is voiced by transhumanists, this is voiced by people who want to create a godlike artificial intelligence. The concern is that because there is this dark side to these large language models, that they could be feeding unstable individuals this is sort of these responses, these malevolent responses, and manipulating them. And okay, your life, Jesse, you know, I don't worry about you using ChatGPT and becoming convinced that it's conscious. But we, you know, as you well know, we live in a society full of unstable people, lonely people, and impressionable children. And those are the people most likely to be affected by this. And because it has, in a sense, in an allegorical sense, a mind of its own, we really don't have any kind of control over it, and there's no accountability. The only person accountable is the person who puts it out, and I don't recall the last time a major tech corporation has really been held to account for the social, psychological damage they've done over the past 20 years.
Yeah, which has been significant. Joe Allen, that was outstanding. Thank you, my man. I appreciate you.
Thank you very much, Jesse. God bless.
All right. We're not done. We have more. We also have, I don't know, Eden Pure deals, $200 off when you buy three of them. Eden Pure, baby, the greatest air purifier ever. And believe me when I tell you, I don't claim to be an expert on many things. I am a top five napper. I'm the menu whisperer. I'm the greatest orderer of food in the world. You know, things like that. I'm a world famous author. You can buy the Anti-Communist Manifesto at jessekellybook.com, by the way. But I'm also the air purifier expert because I've had allergies since I was 10 years old, and I've had all of them. You name it. The cheap, crappy ones, the really nice ones, the big air purifier things. Just trying to get some allergy relief. Nothing worked until I got Eden Pure. The Eden Pure Thunderstorm. It's the smallest one I've ever had. This tiny little black box goes right in the outlet in the wall. I don't even own allergy medication anymore. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Code Jesse gets you $200 off a three-pack. EdenPureDeals.com. Code Jesse. We'll be back.
George Washington was a slave owner. Was George Washington a slave owner? So will George Washington now lose his status? Are we going to take down statues to George Washington? How about Thomas Jefferson? What do you think of Thomas Jefferson? You like him? Okay, good. Are we going to take down the statue? Because he was a major slave owner. Now, are we going to take down his statue? So you know what? It's fine. You're changing history. You're changing culture.
He nailed that. Joining me now, Brenda Hafera, Assistant Director at the Heritage Foundation. Brenda, it is President's Day, by the grace of God. Are they still going after the founders in this country?
Unfortunately, I do believe that's the case in certain circumstances. So I recently came out with a report on the tale of three presidential houses, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that report is on George Washington's Mount Vernon, Thomas Jefferson's Monticello, and James Madison's Montpelier. And the results are decidedly mixed, with Mount Vernon being the good, Monticello being the ugly, and Monticello being the bad, and Montpelier being the ugly. And a big part of that has to do with how much do they talk about the accomplishments of those respective founding fathers, how historically accurate they are, and are they really giving these accomplished men their due?
Okay, so they sounds like they do George Washington's right. That's a good daggone thing. Why are they doing Thomas Jefferson wrong? What are they doing?
Well, Thomas Jefferson, there are no exhibits that are dedicated to his political accomplishments, really. There are a few exhibits at the base of the mountain, if you've been to Monticello, and they're really focused on the building of Monticello and Thomas Jefferson as an architect and scientist, which is all well and good, but it's not sufficient. It's not really what we admire Thomas Jefferson for in terms of what he contributed to this country and to furthering human freedom. And so they don't give dedicated time and space to Thomas Jefferson as a vice president, as diplomat, as author of the Virginia Statute of Religious Freedom, which started the process of separating churches from the state so that people had the freedom to worship in whatever denomination they chose. And of course, he's the architect of the Declaration of Independence. And currently there are no exhibits on the Declaration of Independence at Monticello. And often as you go through, guides will say that all men are created equal didn't mean all, that it meant white property owning men, which is just not true. Men is a substitute for mankind. And the Declaration is something that we look forward to the realization and move towards a greater realization of those principles.
What about James Madison? What'd they do to James?
James Madison is unfortunately the worst case. There are no exhibits currently at Montpelier dedicated to James Madison himself. And James Madison was incredibly important. I know. James Madison was incredibly important. He was our fourth president. He's sometimes described as America's political philosopher because things like separation of powers, checks and balances, those are things that Madison recommends. And Madison thinks about so that we don't have to. And he's deemed the father of the Constitution because of those recommendations, because he authored many of the Federalist Papers, which argued for the Constitution's ratification, and he was the primary author of the Bill of Rights. And unfortunately, at Montpelier, those accomplishments are talked about very little and really cast aside. And some of the things that they've chosen to highlight are not historical, but political. For example, there's a video in the basement that shows protesters from Black Lives Matter and contends that there are more defeats in pursuit of fairness and justice and equality than are triumphs in American history.
Wonderful. Brenda, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
It's my pleasure.
I hate those people. Is that bad to say? I do. I can't stand it. You know what? You know what I love? gold. Let's focus on what I love, right? I hate the left. I love gold. Now, I'm actually not a jewelry guy. I don't wear any jewelry, but I love the financial stability of it. I know I sound like my old man, but I do. When I look at gold, when I look at silver, you know what I see? I see something that isn't going to be driven into the side of a mountain the way they're going to do the rest of the economy. How do I know? Well, I love history. And history books tell me gold has always had value, which means gold will always have value. So while the politicians destroy your dollar, while they destroy your 401k, IRA, why don't you let some gold and silver from Oxford Gold Group protect your 401k and IRA? They have a portfolio protection plan, making sure that floor gets raised. Oh, sure, the government's going to hurt your 401k and IRA. There's nothing we can do about that. Oxford Gold, mitigate some of those losses, huh? Call 833-995-GOLD. They make it easy. They're super laid back. I love these guys. 833-995-GOLD, Oxford Gold Group. All right? We'll be back. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And this lighten the mood, I mean, man, we've done a lot of them. We've had so many funny videos, funny prank videos, stupid things about me. We've had even cute animal videos for you ladies out there. Oh, look at the little puppy. We've had wonderful lighten the moods, but I don't know that, I'm trying to think. I don't know that I've ever done one that has made me smile the way this one made me smile. So just before we get to that though, let's get to this. Before we laugh and smile about our light in the mood, let's do always remember, there are veterans out there right now, Iraq, Afghanistan veterans. As you and I go about our normal daily lives, they're all messed up. They're all messed up here. It's not their fault. You go through something terrible like that, it's hard to come back and just go from that to normal life. They're struggling. Maybe they're struggling with drugs, alcohol. Maybe their families are blowing up because of them. Maybe they're blowing up their jobs. Maybe they're considering suicide. Many of them sadly are, and many sadly do every single day. I've been there in a dark place myself when I got back from Iraq. We have to help. I love Boulder Crest because they're helping. And when I say helping, it's not grabbing a bottle of pills and chucking it at them and saying, best of luck. I mean, real, thoughtful help. Bringing them out of that dark place and bringing them back. Don't we owe them that? Go to bouldercrest.org. They have something called Operation Struggle. It's really, really wonderful. I want you to support it if you can. Whatever you can do. Look, maybe that's $5. I don't know. Look, maybe it's $5,000. I don't know. But whatever you can do. bouldercrest.org. All right? All right. It is President's Day. So in honor of it being President's Day, let's do a shout out to this wonderful, wonderful video from 2016 about someone who's never going to be president.
Dream of going up to her and sitting down next to her, taking her in my arms and saying, look at me, listen to me. You will survive. You will have a good family of your own and three children. And as hard as it might be to imagine, your daughter will grow up and become the president of the United States.
Oh, that didn't work out. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.